ora, welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Jo Moyer. This time next week will be the eve of New Zealand First's 27th Annual Conference. But first, let's rewind to this time last year.
We found in the last, say, decade or more that there are people coming in to be New Zealanders, but they're not really New Zealanders at all, of different nationalities, and they're actually forcing their ideologies onto you and disrespectful of any New Zealand's principles. And I think that is rude, as far as I'm concerned, that they should be asked to abide by New Zealand rules of citizenship, etc. Otherwise, go back to where they come from, because we don't want their type of attitudes.
That was Wired Up a New Zealand First member, Roger Melville, speaking to me at the New Zealand First conference in Tauranga. His comments came after the party had passed a remit in support of the Respecting New Zealand Values Bill, effectively a test for migrants and refugees making New Zealand their home. While the bill has never made it past the conference, New Zealand First leader Winston Peters says it's a strong principle of the party and will be campaigned on at the election next year.
Well, we've always believed that, and we'll campaign on that in the next election, because simply we have always believed that people come to this country should be prepared to salute our flag, or whatever the flag is for the time being, respect our laws, whatever those laws are for the time being, have a tolerance of other religions, whatever those religions are for the time being. And when it comes to basic human rights, treat women fairly and as equals. These are pretty fundamental things that our society stands for. And if you want to be a privileged person to come to New Zealand, then what objection could you have to signing up to most reasonable requests?
If that's so important, which it seems to be, given that you say that it's something that's been part of the party, you know, for three decades, is it something that you would make a requirement of any future coalition deal or supply and confidence deal?
Well, about a year out from the next election, we'll tell you what our terms of negotiation are then, but not now, all right?
Is it something that you took to the table in 2017 when you were having talks, though?
Yes.
So you put it up as a policy position, but it was one that didn't make it through?
Well, no, we put up, if you don't get the number of votes you seek to get, then you've got to cut your cloth of demand, so to speak. But we did put up some fundamental basic talking points with where immigration was concerned, and those are being worked through in the first 3 years of this government, and that's a fact. And some of them you're seeing reflected in decisions being made now. But for those people who say that it means a liberalisation of a policy, they couldn't be more wrong. A liberalisation of a policy was what the last government under National administered.
Right, so if it wasn't specifically a values test, but you said you took that idea to the table, what is it that you were asking for?
Well, we asked for a proper re-evaluation of immigration into this country, and in particular, having regard to reports from the OECD and others that were pointing out New Zealand was not taking skilled immigration, and in fact quite the converse, and was pointing out, amongst other things, that immigration seemed to be purely as a driver to implode the consumption and somehow prop up the economy. Now, that was a very short-term objective, which would have long-term, very expensive outcomes. All of those things are what we took to the table, and that's why the seasonal working scheme, the parental category, and the criteria to come to this country has been significantly tightened up. And the figures are beginning to demonstrate that.
In the last fortnight, the government has announced three significant changes to its immigration policy. The recognised seasonal employer scheme will be boosted by just over 3,000 in the next 2 years. The government has overturned the family link policy that stopped refugees from Africa and the Middle East resettling in New Zealand unless they had family here, and it's reinstated the parent category visa, but with a cap on the number of parents who can come in and a high income test for the child sponsor. The new rules for the parent category visa require an individual to earn almost $160,000 a year in order to bring over two parents. Mr. Peters confirmed his party pushed hard for the new position.
Yes, that's precisely what happened.
So that was a win for New Zealand First, the outcome of the family visa category.
We don't see it like that, wins and losers. I mean, in the end, we're trying to run a policy structure in multiple areas that's for the economic and social short-term, medium-term and long-term benefit for this country. And that's how we see it.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm asking here is that those changes were quite significant to the family visa category. I mean, it completely flipped it on its head in terms of who had to have the money, and it doubled the amount of money that the sponsor had to be earning. So is that New Zealand First changes at play there?
Yes, but it's not a victory in that context. The reality is, go and ask the New Zealand taxpayer, do they want to be footing the bill? And they would say no, but no one's been asking New Zealand taxpayer. In contrast, my party, and I have.
Mr. Peters' rhetoric around wanting migrants to salute the flag and respect New Zealand laws has a very nationalist tone, somewhat at odds with the Prime Minister's recent comments at the United Nations. I asked Mr. Peters if New Zealand was moving away from its multilateral approach and towards nationalism.
No, it's where we always were until the neoliberal experiment of the 80s and the 90s unleashed itself on the basis that more immigration means cheap labour. And that's precisely what was behind it, without any regard to the mass bulk of the New Zealand people. Go and ask the ordinary New Zealander whether they think it's a good idea or not, and how it's affected their house building, their access to health and their access to education, or whether or not they've got space on their roads anymore. All these things were meant to be part and parcel of a planned population policy, but there was no plan other than to drive up consumption by mass immigration against international comparison, and that's what it was. These are the days of the chickens coming home to roost, and you've got all these politicians running for cover, but they were responsible to put it as some sort of nationalistic form of behaviour. Well, here's my response. Well, why don't we double immigration if it's so good? In fact, if it's so good, why don't we triple it? Excepting every prospect of analysis on those questions ends up with ridiculous outcomes. Which was never true in the first place. Immigration should always be focused for the economic and social welfare of the country of incoming domicile, not some other interest.
Do you think people in Auckland sit in traffic in the morning for hours and hours and think this is because of immigration?
Well, they would if you and your colleagues were doing your job over the last three or four decades. That's precisely what they would think. Because one party was saying that's exactly what it's leading to. You've got all this huge demand going to one part of the country with no infrastructure. And right now, there's a local government campaign on where both the candidates, or the two main candidates, are saying precisely that. Now, guess how that happened? And I hope there are people sitting in the queues in the mornings and the nights, which are now 2 hours in both parts of the day, analysing how do we get to this and who was responsible. I hope that they're hearing from the commentariat a bit of honesty for a change rather than passing the buck to someone else.
In an earlier interview with Mr. Peters, I spoke with him about the party's conference in Christchurch next weekend and reminded him of his speech a year ago where he described the National Party as leaderless, moribund and vacuous. He also wrote off opposition leader Simon Bridges and predicted there would be two more National Party leaders before the next election.
Do you think Simon Bridges is still going to be the leader come the election next year?
No.
Who do you think will be?
Well, someone else.
Any ideas?
No.
And do you genuinely still think?
It won't be Paula Bennett. But you cannot have this performance you're seeing in Parliament where you're slinging and throwing out all sorts of allegations without any care for the facts or the law, so to speak, and think that passes for an opposition performance. I've seen good opposition members in Parliament holding the government to account. This party in opposition right now does not.
So do you stand by the fact that you think there'll still be another two leaders to come?
Yes.
So what about New Zealand First's plans for the election next year? It's well understood Shane Jones will be throwing his hat in the ring in the Northland electorate, the same seat Mr. Peters stole in spectacular fashion from National in a by-election in 2015, only for National to snatch it back again in 2017.
Are you able to confirm whether Shane Jones is going to run in the Northland seat at the election next year?
I can't confirm at this point in time any candidate because we haven't opened nominations.
Would you like to see him run in that seat?
Oh, now, you should know, as a party leader, my job is not to go around endorsing candidates all over the country. All I can say is we'll have a seriously highly talented, very experienced ticket of candidates.
Are you planning to run in a seat next year?
Again, you'll have to wait and see.
The annual conference next weekend will be the second for New Zealand First since forming a coalition with Labour at the 2017 election. I asked Mr. Peters whether conferences are easier or harder for the party when it's in government.
I've never thought about it that way. Conventions are always difficult to organise because people have to go to so much trouble to travel and to spend with in the bounds of a party that's never had huge money, their own money, to turn up and make their contribution. But we do have an online service. We've got remits coming from all around New Zealand. But it's never easy, no matter whether you're in government or out of government.
I guess, do you sort of feel more of a sense of expectation when you go to these conferences and you are in government?
I'm not clear what that question means.
In terms of the members, do they have higher expectations and expect more from you and, I guess, what you're going to deliver over the following year when you're in a position of power of being in a coalition?
I'm glad you clarified that because that's precisely what they expect. They want to know, with respect to what you campaigned on, what have you done and what's yet to be done in the next year as we go to 2020 elections.
That interview with Mr. Peters came in the days before the party was hit by a flurry of news headlines. They include a party president resignation, leaked membership details, and complaints about the way people within the party have been treated by the leadership. A former New Zealand First president said the recent leaks must be coming from someone who holds or held a high position in the party. A database of some members' details was sent to media and opposition MPs this week, hot on the heels of another anonymous leak the week before. Kevin Gardner has a long history with New Zealand First as party president between 2010 and 2013 and a board member during the most recent coalition negotiations. But he was ejected from the party late last year and told it was due to him joining another political party, which he says he hadn't. Mr. Gardner spoke to our deputy political editor, Craig McCulloch, and told him very few people would have been privy to the leaked information.
It would have to have come from someone relatively high up within the organisation, in the sense that ordinary board members would not have access to membership details at all. And I do know that the board members did not get to see letters of complaint. About the only thing that could be confirmed by board members would be minutes of any board meeting. So to get the combination of the three has to be someone with very good access to everything, and that has to be someone well up within the organisation.
Winston Peters has said that it's a disgruntled source, perhaps someone who's left the party. Do you think that that's likely?
Yeah, it could be, and it could also be someone that's still within the party.
Do you have any idea who it is?
Not at all.
It's not you?
Not me, no. Heck, I haven't got the information that that's been spread. So even as a party president, I did not have access to membership details. I had to ask the membership secretary for those details. And the lady at the time guarded that with her life just on.
The fact that the information has gotten out there, does that speak to discontent within the party, do you think?
It sounds a little bit that way. Why else would they distribute it? It's supposed to be private.
Is the discontent more pronounced than in other parties, do you think? I mean, is this a real issue? Is this a problem for New Zealand First?
I don't think it's any more than any other political party. I don't think so.
What do you think of the direction of the party at the moment?
No, I would prefer not to answer that right now.
Following that interview, I asked Mr. Peters whether he was worried about the leaks and public criticism so close to the party conference.
I'm not remotely concerned about it, nor is the board, nor are the rest of New Zealand First. You've got a very small little group that is starting their own political party and is getting an enormous amount of publicity from the New Zealand media, even though they haven't started a party, by the way, with material that's 4, 5 and 6 years old. look, the whole system has been changed. Their behaviour is a crime, their behaviour is illegal, and we're going to take action. But as for New Zealand First, well, we're in our 27th year, and we've come through the furnace of fire on many, many issues. This is a mere bagatelle, and we're not concerned about it.
Mr Peters is so unconcerned about it, he's promised to call in the police and Privacy Commissioner. That's Focus on Politics. I'm Jo Moyer. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to listen to this program again, head to rnz.co.nz/focusonpolitics, or you can listen, rate, review and subscribe to Focus on Politics on iTunes. Mā te wā.